Psychological torture is actually not the best way to get a confession out of people, and it is censored by most international courts.
And yet, if you grew up in the South or the Western Hemisphere in the 90s and early aughts, you may have been subjected to psychological torture in the form of... Wait.
Literature.
Check my notes
here. That's right. We're slamming books today, kids, because all of us in the Christian milieu in the 90s had to read the Left Behind series.
This is the Book Report.
Yeah, I like that intro a lot better.
All right, good.
Oh. I'm Joel, and that's Steven, and we haven't introduced ourselves in like 13 episodes, so now you can put
Hi,
a name
I'm
to the Steven, voice.
And that's Joel. The order it should be in.
Fair enough. I don't understand why, I mean, I don't want to insult the thing we record our podcast on, so I'm not going to say its name, but
right.
Why did they change their website? I hate the new format. I sound like an old fogey, but I hate the new format so much.
You kids get off my lawn with your newfangled technology.
Do you remember back when Facebook decided to change its entire operating format, like every 3 months? Does it still do that? I don't know.
I don't know. I don't really get on Facebook anymore. But back in the day, you could count on that. It was like taxes.
It was so infuriating. I never understood why anyone. I mean. If there's a new feature everyone's asking for, hint, hint, Twitter with the edit button, like, I get that, but they just kept reorganizing where things were, just for fun. It was so annoying.
Yeah, it's honestly amazing that they didn't go under from doing that, because they were still a fairly young company when they were ruining everyone's user experience.
When that started, we were still like not technically supposed to be on Facebook because we weren't college students, and it was only for college kids at the time.
I think that they had, by the time it started getting mainstream, I think they just capped it at 13-year-olds or older.
Okay. I mean, that's the time. But by then, it was already like every 3 months, there's a new format. And then people would be like, are you using the old one? And we'd have to get like cheats to use the old one still.
Right, right. Like, it would let you click a button to go back to the old Facebook, but then eventually that would go away too.
Yeah, all of it was stupid. This is very off topic, but that needs to be said.
This episode brought to you by Facebook, our eternal overlords. All hail the Zuck.
Ew.
Glory to the Zuck.
Calling him the Zuck makes him so much worse, and he's already terrible.
Zuck the Zuck.
Ugh. Ugh. Gross.
Hey, you just wait. That adulation is going to get the algorithms to put us on the map.
I don't think the algorithms are so advanced that they're actually listening to us, but...
Disagree,
yeah,
but carry on.
Okay, well...
Carry on.
Speaking of conspiracies, no, we're not anywhere close to that. Yeah, why have we not talked about Christian literature, period, in the 3 seasons we've done? What's wrong
boring.
With us? Well, that's, I mean, fair, but some of it's good. As we're looking at our Google Doc right now.
No, that is fair. Some of it is. It's more just like when you think of, like, Christian music, for example, the immediate thought is, oh, no, not this. Please not this. Get this off the radio. Not because it's necessarily bad, but it's not always what you want to be listening to on the radio.
And it has the reputation of... Like all Christian pop culture, it always has the reputation of being a knockoff of something else, and therefore it can't
be
good.
Right.
And that's not true, but it does tend to be true.
Well, and what's interesting is that that's a fairly recent phenomenon. I would say that you and I are like the direct recipients of that phenomenon, because, you know, Western culture is largely shaped by new and inventive Christian art, music,
right.
You name it. And then you get to the 1980s and beyond, and suddenly it's like, you know what? Let's not be inventive anymore. Let's just copy everything.
Right.
Plagiarize the hell out of it.
Right. Yeah, I mean, since largely Western culture was driven from Christianity, period. And then as we got to post or modern times, it quickly became the other way around, which is just odd. But whatever. That's neither here nor there. we should give our bona fides as to why we're allowed to talk about Christian lit with any authority.
Bona fides for why we can. Are you kidding me? Have you been on the internet? Everyone talks about Christian stuff, and I doubt any of them go to church.
Bonafides. I know, but this is why we should give our actual bona fides. It's like, this is why you should listen to us. No, I'm just kidding. I was just saying we both grew up in very churchy backgrounds. And I would normally say you more than most people, but you've met my mother, so you know that that's probably not true.
I don't know, dude. My dad is a preacher.
That's what I'm saying. I'm saying I'm... Never mind. It was a joke that I'm not sure I even got. Continue.
It was so good it went over even my head. No, I'm actually a level 4 Sea Org.
Oh, okay. Nice.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That's a recent development.
Oh, yeah. Did I not tell you? I met Tom Cruise. We hung out. It was crazy.
Who's taller, Tom Cruise or Peter Dinklage?
Yes.
No, I'm just saying we both grew up, and I don't know how sheltered you were being a pastor's kid, but
why do you ask?
We were for a large period in the early 90s, early aughts when I grew up, we were simply not allowed to consume any kind of media or culture that wasn't Christian. Everything that was secular was inherently bad. So for a long time, all I knew was Christian lit TV, music, and movies, which is why I feel like we have a better handle on the insanity. Sometimes it is Christian pop culture than others. You were largely the same, right?
Well, yeah. And then also add on to the fact that I was the oldest in my family. So I was the test subject for every crazy thing that the 1990s and Focus on the Family and Dr. James Dobson could throw at the culture. Yeah. And then I think I've told you this. My family actually did not pay for cable. Mm-hmm. They also didn't pay for satellite. Oh, wait. Yes, they did. They paid for a special Christian version of satellite television called Sky Angel.
Oh, beautiful.
It only broadcast the Catholic channel, like EWTN with the Pope. It cast a like nature soundscapes channel. It had the Kid Zone that was
I don't remember the Kid Zone.
It was weird. And then everything else was from the 1940s, 50s, and 60s for some reason. Apparently, so that was wholesome.
The best things you were allowed to watch.
Lucy and Ricky slept in different beds.
Separate beds, yeah. So the best things you were allowed to watch were, I'm assuming, the VeggieTales, but that might be a bit too liberal. And what were those, Adventures in Odyssey?
So, yeah, no, the VeggieTales is OG. Like, those things are awesome, and I will watch those until my dying breath, because those are actually, I contend, fairly original, because they're just retellings of things. Then, and you also fun. Have...
I love great. VeggieTales. So and they have songs like Hairbrush and Cheeseburger, which are the single greatest auditory experiences of your life.
Cheeseburger's pretty good.
Go on.
Yeah, sorry. Or, why am I sorry? You interrupted me. So VeggieTales was great. I was allowed to watch that. Then you also had something you're probably not familiar with because it was made in like the 80s. But it was called Flying House and Superbook.
Superbook, I remember.
Yeah, they were like these legit anime-style TV shows that basically would have these kids either exploring the Bible or flying... exploring the Old and New Testament, and they were really actually pretty cool. I enjoyed watching them as a kid because they got like intense. They pull any punches style with the Old CGI, Testament.
If I remember correctly, but this was, you know.
No. It was like hand-drawn animation.
Okay. I remember it being very computer CGI looking, but that I may be having a rose-colored glasses moment.
No, I think you're an idiot. Don't worry. And then the other one's Adventures in Odyssey. Yes, I watched those, and I also had all of the audio cassette tapes.
Yes, I loved those things.
Back in the
what day. Was there a show that had like a giant anthropomorphic buffalo, an eagle, and stuff that would teach kids?
Probably.
That is that a crazy fever dream, or is that a real thing?
That sounds correct or something. I don't know what it is, though.
Okay.
I don't know. Anyways. Long story short, Joel and I both experienced a lot of Christian pop culture and none of the real pop culture. So that's why we're going to talk about Christian books.
Yeah. Yeah, because this is about books, so we wanted to talk about Christian lit. And so I put that idea out on Twitter, and I talked to a couple group chats I'm in as to what things we had to mention, and then did very cursory Googling. And obviously, the only place to start, and the place that everyone seems most interested in us starting, is the Left Behind series, like, I don't even know, IP? Yeah, like, it's bigger than just a series. It's huge.
It's
huge.
It's like 12, 13, 14 books.
Yeah, and that's in the main series. There's 13 books in the main series. There are 40 books in a kids' series. There are a series of movies and then a reboot of the movies most recently. There's video games, and there's like spin-off series and graphic novels. Massive IP.
Tim LaHaye and Jerry B. Jenkins also wrote like another series that was basically Dan Brown Da Vinci Code ripoff type stuff. Mm-hmm. I read one of those books simply because I, as a kid, loved, and I unashamedly loved, the Left Behind series, because for as absolutely batshit crazy as they are, they're really entertaining books if you are a like Christian kid who is raised on the idea that Christianity is the one true religion, and eventually Jesus is gonna come back, take all the Christians, and everyone else is screwed. So as a kid, these books are awesome. You're like, oh man, this is so lit. And they were really good.
Well, here's a confession, admission. I don't know what this is, but I never read these books. I don't know how. I remember reading a couple of the kids' books and hating them because they filled me with existential dread and were horrible. But I think I may have started the very first book and gave up super quickly because of how much it scared me. So I did not read these books. I remember our church playing the movies all the time. Like every time we had a movie night, it was one of the Left Behind movies. And I always managed to avoid watching them, or at least would find something to distract me so I didn't have to watch them if they were playing. And I somehow managed to get out of Southern Baptist childhood without ever consuming the Left Behind monolith. But I still feel like I know almost everything in them just because they were taught as almost like a New Testament of scripture. Like they were so believed that this is exactly how everything is going to happen that we had sermons on them when I was growing up.
So. Yeah. So to that effect, I had some people that I knew growing up, and I was talking to one of them one time, and they got on the subject of like the Antichrist and the end of the world and all of that fun stuff. And they were like, yeah, so I was at a prophetic conference the other week. And first of all, oh, God. But.
Okay, but we should do like, we don't really want to disrespect. I would say that, but I can't really say it with a straight face. We're trying not to be super mean about disrespecting someone's faiths and beliefs. We both are still believers ourselves, but we are going to probably end up mercilessly making fun of some stuff that you may really care about. And if you don't want to hear that, you should duck out now. Just as an FYI.
Yeah. So anyways, very active in the church. However, I do not have a problem citing my opinions on certain things. So anyways, particular individual told me that. And then I was like, oh, okay. So like, blah, blah, blah. And then they were like, yeah, so Obama's not the Antichrist. And I was like, okay, we're making progress. And I was like, how do you know that? And
some headway.
And right. And he said, oh, it's because we know for certain that he will come out of Eastern Europe. And I was like, wait, this sounds exactly like the Left Behind novels. Mm-hmm. And that's basically where he got his ideas from. So this was very pervasive in terms of how it shaped the evangelical worldview. Even people who haven't read the books still have an image of the rapture, of the end of the world, that is filtered through these books, even if they don't realize it. Because it has really had an outsized effect on evangelical culture, and it's really interesting to see that manifest itself. And also, if any one of you read these books as a kid, you probably identify with Joel in his existential dread, because I know I do. When I was a kid, one of the worst things I remember happening is that, like, my parents were, like, ancient old people, even when they were in their 30s. And they would go for like mid-morning walks. Like
for the record, his parents are both younger than both of my parents. But yeah.
Right. They're not old people. They had me when they were in their 20s. But so they, you know, they went for mid-morning walks. And so as a child, after I had read the Left Behind books, seen the movies, I would wake up and my parents weren't there. And if they didn't leave a note, my first thought was, oh God, the rapture happened. I'm left alone. I need to fend for myself. I don't know what I'm doing. Ah.
Oh yeah. 100%. Every time you suddenly couldn't find people, that was a like joke that was not funny. Like it was one of those like shared, not delusions, but like shared psychoses. Yeah. That's what I'm looking for. That if you were a couple of friends suddenly couldn't find anyone around you or people were missing, you would be like, haha, the rapture must have happened, while secretly being scared out of your mind that the rapture.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was my biggest fear. I would go turn on the TV if my parents were gone and flick it to the news. Just to see if there was important information.
I had done that so many times. And this is such a... This is such a prevailing thing. I don't believe the rapture is a real thing anymore. And still, still to this day, not quite recently, but in, you know, the last past 3 or 4 years, there has been a moment when I suddenly couldn't get a hold of anybody and couldn't hear anything that I went on Twitter to see if there was anything about missing people trending. Like it's still that ingrained in our subconscious.
And it's hard to get rid of it. It really, really is, because you read these books, and we can actually circle back around to the books in a minute. We've just been talking about their effect on culture. But yeah. You get these books, and then your preacher preaches stuff that's very similar to these books. And
then shows the movies that night because he doesn't want to preach a Sunday night.
Exactly. And so it just starts working its way into the back of your brain. And I even remember that my sister, as a kid, one of her biggest fears was... And, you know, she was a little kid. One of her biggest fears was that the rapture was going to happen and then no one was going to be there to take care of her cat, you know. And so, like, as silly as that sounds to an adult, to a kid, that's a fear.
Yeah, absolutely. And these are, yeah.
So anyways, the books themselves.
Well, okay, yeah, we should probably do that.
Unless you have something.
No, I was going to say that these do... They because of, as you said, they were so taught in the church, and they were in every single person's home, and then they were shown at Sunday night movies and things, and then the sermons that were around them would reference these books. They weren't presented to young minds as fiction. They were presented as like an alternate history would have been, except for it's an alternate future, like. These things are going to happen similar, but we don't know exactly how this happened.
Yeah, because like, they would reference Bible, like specific scriptures in the story to back it up as if it was like not so much fiction, but a prophetic understanding of the future.
Exactly. These were taught like prophecy. That's how I should have said that. But because of that, they instilled some ideas into evangelical culture that are extremely dangerous and very persuasive today. The whole thing, and we can go over the plots or at least the names of all the book because there's again like 13 of them. But there was this the big plot. The villain was United Nations. I think they changed the name of it, but it was the United Nations and the Catholic Church.
It was the UN.
Okay. It was extremely subtly anti-Semitic. It was extremely against media. It was extremely against government of all forms. Like. And this is now how the ultra right thinks about things, because these books showed that all of these things could be used for evil and it wasn't just taken as fiction. So that's why these things are such a huge megalith in Christian culture. So you have read the books. I just did before we started this episode. I refreshed myself on which specific of the 40 children's books I had read, and then I read the long form descriptions of every single one of the original series. You want to go through them and give you give as detailed view as you can as we go book by book? Or do you want to continue?
Oh, that's not going to happen.
The merits.
Yeah. So, well, basically these books are really, really, you know, similar. And so you got, in my mind, they're all just like one super long story.
Okay.
They're interesting to, like I said, they were really fun to read as a kid. We can do it however you want to do it. I'll probably just end up talking about like the things I specifically remember. Because
well,
I
why don't we just
give, I cannot yeah. give a book by book summary. I That's guarantee fine. It. It's as you said, the last one came out 20 years ago, yeah. and that was probably when I read the last book.
Well, let's list off the names of the books, and then you give the overview of all the big things you can remember, and I'll fill in any gaps from what I just read on Wikipedia or things I just have to ask you about because I don't believe it actually happened in the novel.
Absolutely.
Let's All right. So book one. Published in 1995, Left Behind, a novel of Earth's last days. Then Tribulation Force, the continuing drama of those left behind. These are all the, I'm reading the like subtitles with them. Also, that's another thing that I forgot about until I started reading these descriptions, is that back in the 90s, Church was really big on not inventing words, not changing language, but using very complicated language like tribulation and desecration and indwelling to make themselves sound better than everybody else. And somewhere during our lifetimes, they started dumbing that down to reach more people. And I like that it was a thing that happened that I'm remembering while reading these things. Random side note.
Okay.
Okay. Left Behind, Tribulation Force, then Nikolai, The Rise of the Antichrist. Then Soul Harvest, The World Takes Sides. Then Apollyon, The Destroyer is Unleashed. Apollyon, is that how you pronounce it? Apollyon?
Apollyon, yeah.
Why is there two L's and it's not pronounced with whatever? Apollyon, yeah. The Destroyer is Unleashed. Assassins, Assignment Jerusalem, Target Antichrist. The Indwelling, The Beast Takes Possession.
Wait. Actually, I'm going to ask you to like slow down just a bit, just so I can say like random things I remember from each book. So begin with the first one, and I'm going to give like my one sentence summary of what I think happened in the book.
Okay, that's fun. Cool. Left Behind, a novel of the Earth's last days.
All right, everyone flies to heaven naked, and a bunch of people are left really confused.
Okay, that is a point I know let's just do it this way, where we have to break down each book. The flying to heaven naked thing, that was one of the ways, you know, when we did our rapture checks to find out if people had disappeared, it was one of the ways I knew it hadn't happened when I was younger, because there weren't neatly folded piles of clothes.
Because... Oh, same. I would go into my parents' bedroom and be like, oh, thank God there are no clothes on the floor. They're still here.
And why is it in my head that they would be neatly folded? Like, what is that? Right. Were they neatly folded when people disappeared in the movie or something?
No, they weren't. They were like in the shape of a body that was no longer there.
Okay, but then for some reason it is ingrained in my head that at some point I was taught that when people are raptured, their clothes will just be there neatly folded where they were standing.
Yeah, sorry, that's just on you, bud.
Where did that come from?
Sorry.
All right, continue. Tribulation Force, the continuing drama of those left behind.
All right, some weird dude from like Romania becomes the Antichrist. His name is Carpathia, or Nikolai Carpathia. Nikolai Carpathia, because I'm assuming he's from the Carpathian Mountains. I don't know. The books are incredibly Eurocentric.
Yeah.
This is fun. Continue.
Book number three is called Nikolai, The Rise of the Antichrist.
Yeah.
No, I don't know. Yeah.
Couldn't tell you. Down.
It says, like, that's what I was reading. I was reading the plots. It said on Tribulation Force, it's talking about Nikolai, this guy who, like, becomes famous.
Rise of the Antichrist, like, I can vaguely say, like, that's when he starts taking over. He shows up in Tribulation Force, but he doesn't really become the end-all, be-all, whatever, until...
Gotcha. And then it also starts talking about in Nikolai Force as if World War III already happened, and it's not very, like... Did World War III happen in the books, or has it already happened by the time of the books? It's very unclear.
Nah, I don't know. Continue.
Okay. The next book is Soul Harvest, The World Takes Sides.
Oh, okay. So if I had to guess, like, that's probably when they start being like, nope, I got nothing on that. That one is completely blurred to me.
I highlighted a piece of the plot summary because it made me laugh so hard. So there's this massive earthquake and a quarter of the world's population is killed.
I do remember the earthquake. That does jog memories. Yeah.
And then the global community, which is now the name of the UN, starts a new program called Cellular Solar, aka Cell Soul, pronounced like you're going to sell your soul. A solar-powered cell phone global network. It's specifically solar-powered because green energy has got to be evil.
Oh my god. All right. Cell Soul means you're selling your soul. That's fun.
Cell phones are evil, so is green energy. They're both the work of the Antichrist. Okay, yeah. The next book is Apollyon, The Destroyer is Unleashed.
All right, so Apollyon was batshit nuts. Basically, the hordes of the underworld are unleashed. Everything is locusts. The locusts attack anyone who doesn't have the mark of, like, Christ on them.
Mark of the believer, which is like an invisible mark that only other believers can see.
Yes, it was invisible and only believers could see, but I remember that some dude in the books is like a anti-Christian spy who rubs ashes on his forehead because somehow he knows about the mark, and that's never explained, but he fools everyone. But then he steps outside and then the locust things rip him to shreds. He's like, I'm sorry, I lied, Jesus is Lord, and then he dies. And that's also where I learned that you can throw a cigarette into a bucket of old gasoline and not be blown to kingdom come, because only the fumes are what explode. And then they blow up their underground bunker because they use the fumes of gasoline. It was a very weird plot point.
Okay, I'm glad you remember that much, because that's one of the things I had highlighted in this plot summary. Because as far as I can tell, the Mark of the Believer comes several books before the Mark of the Beast happens.
Right.
And the Mark of the Believer, is that even a thing in Revelations?
Revelations. A lot of the prophecies and stuff about the end times don't come from Revelations. Right. They come from Daniel.
Yeah. And yeah, we're not going to get into the theology of it because there are so many, or the text, original text of the Bible, that these are some very loosely based on, but. Mm-hmm. Because there's so many different takes of all of that. Because there's people who believe that Daniel and Revelation's prophecies are both about King, was it Nero? And the original falls, or in the falls of Jerusalem, and that most of them have already taken place. And there's those people who believe that exactly what happens in Left Behind books is about to happen. And there are people who believe that several of the characters in the book are just Trump. So we're all over the map in the actual theology. Not going to get into that. Back to the books. But yeah, I had highlighted who it turns out has faked the Mark of the Believer to gain access to Ken's stash of money. And I'm just like,
I'm glad that I was able to randomly address that point. So apparently it has less interesting plot points than I remember.
All right. Okay. Next is Assassins, with the longest subtitle on the series. Assignment, Jerusalem. Target, Antichrist.
Yeah, so this one is awesome. The good guys, we will say. They're the good guys. They're trying to kill the Antichrist. That's universally good. So the one of them is this dude who's in a wheelchair, and he spends the entire book making his own sword because there's some prophecy about cutting off the head of the Antichrist or something. Regardless, he spends the entire book sharpening a sword. Now, he doesn't sharpen it correctly, okay? Normally, if you sharpen a sword, you use like a stone or something to get it to a finer and finer and finer sharpness because you're grinding it down. He shaves it, shaves the metal off to make it sharper, which is not how you do that.
Wouldn't that make it super brittle?
Yeah, exactly. And so he makes it into this like impossibly thin blade. And then there's this entire conversation in the book between him and one of the other protagonists about how sharp it is. And he takes like a wadded up rag and drops it. And the authors describe the rag as like parting in half before it even touches the blade. And what's the matter? You're going to kill a dude. It doesn't matter how sharp this stupid thing is. So he sticks it into the hollowed out section of his wheelchair. And then he rolls on stage to go kill the Antichrist. It doesn't work. And I don't remember why.
Well, yeah. Okay. That makes more sense than the description on this, because the description on about this book is all about how, and by the way, we'll have some art of the books on our Instagram and as our episode art for this. I distinctly remember the covers of all of these books. They're so iconic to me because of the cover of Assassins. It's a picture of, well, just the word Assassins in like bright reddish purple. And then this really cool silhouette shot of the moon and like crosshairs on the 3/4 mark of the moon. And it's such a cool picture. Whenever I think of Left Behind, I think of that book. But in this book, the assassin tool they're going to use is a incorrectly sharpened knife. Yet during the whole story, one of the main characters, isn't they the pilot of the Antichrist?
Yeah, he is a pilot, and then he's not a Christian. He's the same guy from the first book, but he's not a Christian, and then he becomes a Christian, and then he infiltrates the Antichrist, because the Antichrist needs a pilot, and he gets to be it, even though he's a Christian, so he's secret agent man. Yeah,
okay, so he's flying his plane, and the cover art is of like a crosshairs on a gun, but the best way they can come up with killing the man is shaving down a knife, like making a shiv.
Right. Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's all a right. sword, just but yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wanted to make sure that I got that right.
Got it. Nailed it.
The next book is called, and the end of that book, the description talks about how one of the guys tries to shoot him. So they do try to shoot him, apparently, but he gets
This part is super cool. So the gun they use is called the Saber. Because again, prophecy of like cutting the Antichrist.
Yeah.
Right. This gun shoots bullets that flatten out in the air to turn into discs.
Well, that's kind of cool. That's cool.
It's really cool.
Okay.
I told you, these books are so cool.
Okay. Now that makes sense, because the end of the description on that one talks about how when they investigate the wound and it looks like it was made by his special gun, but he remembered getting like hit from behind right before he shot. So it couldn't have been him. And they're trying to figure out who the actual assassin was. Whatever. Doesn't really matter, because the next book is called The Indwelling, The Beast Takes Possession, in which that was a segue for you to start talking.
So I think this is the book where they create this giant statue of, Nikolai Carpathia. No. They create a statue of the beast. I don't know. Doesn't matter. There's a giant statue that's supposed to symbolize the brand new pan world religion that combines pieces of every religion into one religion. Basically, it's like Hinduism, Buddhism, Christianity, Judaism, blah, 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 blah. And it is this hollowed out statue that has an eternal fire burning inside of it. Okay, with me so far? Cool. Mm-hmm. So the fuel for this fire is ridiculous, because in my mind, I cannot imagine this fuel lasting for more than like 10 seconds. It's the onion paper that they use to print Bibles on, like that super thin, really sheer paper.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, so that's the fuel for this fire. They're just burning pages of the Bible.
Okay. How big is this thing?
Enormous. I think it was like 60 feet high or something.
So they just put all remaining Bibles into this thing, and somehow that's the fuel for an eternal flame?
Yes.
Okay.
Isn't that fun?
Okay, we're going to move on before I just...
Lose your mind?
Yeah, at the end of that one, I guess he comes back to life. The Carpathia dude's resurrected.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Okay. He's also dead. I forgot about that.
But he's resurrected, and then Satan himself possesses him, like wears him like a skin suit, right?
Right, yes. Okay. Uh-huh.
So the next book is The Mark, The Beast Rules the World. So it's finally, 4 books later, we suddenly get The Mark of the Beast, which everybody remembers from the story.
Right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Is that all that happens in that book?
Anything else you can tell me?
I don't have anything highlighted. I do have something down at the bottom. Everything reaches a climax when Carpathia announces he will be returning to Jerusalem less than a month after his death there to occupy what he believes is his rightful house, the Jewish temple. So here's what I mean, and this is going to be a culture side conversation. here's what I mean about it being subtly anti-Semitic. The whole, and not very subtly, but subtly, the whole idea of the Christian Armageddon, or at least the pop culture Christian Armageddon, is that Jerusalem and Israel are extraordinarily important. The Jews themselves, no one cares about. And yeah. That is how these books present it. And it's very, very clearly presented that way. Because one thing I remember from one of the movies, or just a discussion of the books, because again, I don't read, they didn't read them, is that at the last battle, there are millions of like a Jewish force that isn't allowed mm-hmm. inside their like mountain. And then Jesus shows up and like some of them turn to Jesus. They're already on the good guy's side fighting in this final battle, but they're not really good guys until Jesus shows up. And then only like a third of them are good guys.
One of the main characters towards the end of the series is a Jew who converts to Christianity.
Okay. So yeah, it just gives the whole thing that unless you convert to Christianity, you're Jews are evil. And it's just mm-hmm. very, very bizarre. But that's how you can have massive right-wing groups who are cheering the fact that we're moving we moved our consulate from wherever to Jerusalem.
Tel Aviv to Jerusalem.
Yet then they march for Trump carrying Nazi flags. Like, that's how you can have both of those things. They do not care about the people. It's just the location for some reason. Going on.
There you go.
The next book is Desecration, Antichrist Takes the Throne. Okay, so four books ago, he died. Mm-hmm. Now he's on the throne.
He didn't really die.
Was he not the king already?
No. So basically at this point, they end up rebuilding the temple in Jerusalem. Okay. And then that becomes the seat of power for the beast / Antichrist.
Gotcha. Because in Revelation, it talks about the temple being destroyed, but the temple is destroyed. So they had to rebuild it so they could destroy it again.
Am I getting that right? No, there's a line in the Bible that says, like, when the abomination sits in the seat of something or something.
Okay.
So it basically says, like, that, yeah, it's, like, strong biblical footing.
Gotcha. Okay. Then we have The Remnant on the Brink of Armageddon. This is book 13. You got anything from that one?
At this point, I believe, how many books are there in the series?
There are 14, 15 in the original series, I guess.
Okay, so in book 13, if they're getting blah, blah, blah for the Armageddon, I believe that everyone starts to make their way towards Jerusalem. And at some point, there's also a giant cross that appears in the sky. But everyone is going to Jerusalem because that's where the final battle / Armageddon is going to occur.
Sorry, I'm off. This is only the 10th book. But it's the 13th book chronologically, because some of the books that came out in 2006 take place before it. I don't understand any of that sentence except to say that this is not the 13th book, it's the 10th book.
Okay.
Yeah, that was bizarre.
Continue.
Okay, so now we are on our way to Jerusalem for the final battle in The Remnant. The next book is Armageddon. And this is it starts out the final year. This is what confused me. I need to ask you about, because the opening sentence is, it is the beginning of the final year of the tribulation. And then mm-hmm. the last sentence of the description is the tribulation begins. And I'm like, how can it be the end and the beginning?
While you're looking, I might be able to help you out. Basically the rapture and end times and all that is split into like 7-year periods. So the tribulation, when Christians are like beaten and persecuted and blah, 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 is 7 years, and then you got another certain time period where it all changes, and I don't remember the time period exactly. I used tribulation? To know it very well.
Is that
well.
A thing?
Oh, goodness. I used to know it really, really well.
Okay, anyways.
I'll find it.
So that is Armageddon, second to last book.
Okay, I got it. You ready?
Okay, yes.
Okay, so Rapture. And then there is 7 years of the basically tribulation that's split into two distinct parts. And then there is the second coming at the end of that. And okay. then you have the millennium and then eternity.
Yeah. So we're here near the second coming, I guess, because it's the final year of tribulation.
Beginning of tribulation is 21 months. Then you have the seal of God on foreheads, and then you have another 21 months. Then you have Satan cast down from heaven, and then 42 months, which is the great tribulation, and then you have the glorious appearing of Christ.
Okay. And isn't this
the timeline of the tribulation in the Left Behind series?
Okay, gotcha. And isn't, I mean, these are based on verses in Revelation that break down times like that.
Yep.
But if I remember correctly, in from Bible class, that Judaism has a lot of, or the Jewish culture and faith, yeah, have a lot of numerology and use numbers as symbols for things, like yep. the fact that 666 and 777 and forgiving somebody 70 times 7 times are all not to be taken literally, but as symbolic of a large number or a specific amount of numbers, mm-hmm. correct?
Yeah.
But they're taken in these books to be exactly 21 years, exactly 7 right. years, that kind of thing. Okay.
Yes.
All right. That helps clear it up a little bit. Because I was very confused about, they kept talking about times and these descriptions. And from what I remember, the kids' books, they didn't go into that at all. So finally, we have Glorious Appearing, The Ends of Days, as the final book in the original series.
Okay.
Okay, and so this is the one, yeah, it has the sign of the cross, or the sign of the Son of Man, a giant cross appears, heals one of them, and then everybody else is saved, or everybody else, either saved or undecided, is cured of their injuries, which causes many to become saved, including one-third of the Jewish remnant.
Mm-hmm.
So that happens in the middle of the battle. And again, the entire Jewish remnant at this point is fighting on the side of the good guys, but only a third of them become saved at the end?
Right.
Okay.
Continue.
That's okay. I thought there was going to be more information, but okay. So then, yeah, Jesus comes back. Antichrist tries to kill him. Jesus kills him instead, casts Satan out of him, and then throws Satan into an endless pit and the dead body of the Antichrist into a lake of fire.
Dude, you rolled over the entire best part of that book. The entire book is just like one giant Avengers Endgame or Infinity War battle sequence. And one of the Jewish guys who's the protagonist, like, he's like this nonviolent pacifist throughout the entire series. And then he grabs an Uzi and just starts mowing down the forces of darkness like a giddy kid at Christmas. And he's so excited about it. And then people are dying and dying and dying and dying. And then Jesus comes in, and then it takes very literally when the Bible is like, and there's blood up to the bridle of a horse. And so Jesus is wading through in his white robes and very bloody.
Oh, that's gross.
Yeah.
So which is better? Which is a better final battle, terrifying scene? All of Glorious Arrival or the last book in the Dresden Files?
Dresden Files.
I'm just asking if they're comparable or one's clearly better.
Dresden Files is better because there's more happening. Literally, gotcha. in this book, it's just like, it's like a zombie movie, honestly, because the bad guys aren't really thinking or okay. sentient or anything. They're just literally marching towards the walls of Jerusalem with guns, and the good guys are mowing them down. And it's an endless onslaught of mindless dummies walking towards Jerusalem with guns. And so it's honestly a very boring fight scene to listen to.
That is doesn't sound fun.
Right.
That's weird. Okay. Well, let's talk about, is there anything else we missed in the story that we need to cover? Because those were the original books. Then we have three prequels.
Can we talk about the nutso crap in it?
Yes. Okay. Cool. Well, I just want to mention that while that main storyline is taking place, there is an entirely different storyline that is just youth group lessons condensed into Animorphs length books, but take place after the apocalypse, going on simultaneously as the rest of it. But there's only a single character that crosses over between the two books. And one of the main themes of this book is, or this series, is the total isolation. And like every few books, a fourth of the world dies. So it becomes more and more isolated, and a smaller knit group of good guys that kind of feeds into the superiority complex, or the you want to be victim complex that people who read these books want to have. But somehow none of the book series cross over at all. And that just was bizarre to me, because when I was reading the kids' books and I asked one of my older brothers, when does this person, like, do this person do this? Cause they're doing similar things. And I was like, oh, do they meet so-and-so? And he's like, no, I've never heard of that person. I was like, how? Like, they're doing, like, they're both going to this one thing and they never run into each other. Like, what? Yeah. So that was just right. A weird problem I had with it. And then I don't even know, let's just focus on the books, because if we dive into the movies and...
Yeah, we don't need to do that.
Let's just put it this way. Quite recently, Nicolas Cage starred in an adaptation of these books. So that's all you need to know.
Still have not seen that one.
All right. Go with your batshits as our expert on them.
Yeah, so the books are wildly anti-Catholic, which as a Catholic, I don't necessarily appreciate. They're weirdly anti-Catholic. Okay, so most Catholics are not raptured, which means they don't go up to heaven. Some of them are.
Like I mentioned, as they're subtly anti-Semitic, they are blatantly, outwardly anti-Catholic.
Oh yeah, they're very anti-Catholic. Basically, they say, "All right, when Jesus comes back, Catholics aren't going to heaven. Sorry." And then, the Pope who is Pope during the rapture, he actually does go to heaven, but it's described by the book because he was embracing the views of Martin Luther, and that's why he gets raptured. So he doesn't get raptured because he's a Catholic. He gets raptured because he's not actually, he's like putting on a show, but he's actually a secret Protestant. Right. And then the the successor of the Pope, the next one, basically establishes a new false religion and becomes the head of the one world faith, basically becomes like buddy buddy with the Antichrist, and they become a super squad. So
I do remember that. I do remember
And the authors of the book publicly said their books are not anti-Catholic.
I remember growing up and not knowing much about Catholicism until this first movie came out, when I asked about Catholic, because I had Catholic friends. And I asked about it and was told that Catholics think they're Christians, but they're really not. And that was just, that was what was taught.
That's fun.
Yeah, it's not. And that's like, that's the kind of thinking that led to things like The Troubles and further back. Help me out. You're the historian. The big Protestant Catholic wars.
Most of them.
Continue. Yeah. The Crusades and things like that. Like, that kind of thinking leads to violence and death. And I was just taught that casually as a kid.
Oh yeah. I very vehemently, since I was not raised Catholic, believed Catholics were not actual Christians. My thinking has changed slightly on that since then.
Just a little bit.
Maybe. Couldn't really tell you.
There's a line in Dairy Girls on Netflix, where they meet like some Russian people who come for like a student exchange, and they're sitting there, and it's like, well, and they're asking why the troubles are happening and why they're so angry. It's like, well, there's two different religions and cultures at fight. And the Catholic interrupts, or not the Catholic, but the Russian interrupts, and she's like, actually, you don't have two different religions, just two different flavors of the same religion. And it's such a well put comment that I was growing up taught the opposite of.
Right. Yeah, it's fun stuff. So that was insane. And then they pull in a lot of stuff that's like maybe not that crazy. It's just kind of funny to watch them try and write it in the story. So mm-hmm. In one scene in the book, they are all in this massive amphitheater and they're trying to give a speech. And all of the Christians are able to give speeches to everyone listening because they can speak every language, basically. Yeah, they can speak in tongues. The Antichrist people are like, oh, cool, so we don't need our translators. So then they step up to the mic and they start talking and everyone's like, what? I don't understand. And then the Christians come back up to the mic and they start talking and everyone's like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then the Antichrist people come up and everyone's like, no, we can't understand you. And it just goes back and forth for way too long. And I think in like that same book, all the water on earth turns to blood, including the water in water bottles. But Christians don't have this issue somehow.
Okay. And that's one of the, that's one of the things I remember from the kids series is that it seemed a lot of the author wanted his heroes to both have their cake and eat it too. He wanted them to both be the victims and be the put upon they're, you know, running for their lives and everyone is attacking them, but also have all the superpowers and all the good stuff somehow. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. Both of them did not work. Like if you're the only people who can drink on the planet and yet you're not a victim, like everyone else is going to die.
Basically that was kind of an issue because the whole thing is that these Christians are supposed to be severely persecuted. They were living it up. I tell you, yeah. They were not getting attacked by murder hornets. They were drinking clean water.
Mm-hmm.
It was great. It was a good time. Good time for them.
And it's presented as like, I don't know. It's presented as like everyone else is too stupid or too wants to be evil to, go onto the good side. But then at the same time, there's a whole bunch of people who are like on their side that somehow aren't yet Christians, that bad things don't happen to them either. And it's just like, what is this? What are the rules?
Very inconsistent. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I felt the whole time, because that's one of the other reasons I gave up on a couple of the books later on. Because again, the kids books are like 40 books long, and I gave up somewhere around book 20. There was this whole concept of only the good people are left, but at the same time, some of them aren't good enough yet. And it was very bizarre. Like you still have to accept Christ, even though you didn't get raptured. But all of us who didn't get raptured and accepted Christ, we are just special for different reasons. And it's just made no sense theologically to me, or like just within the text of the book, it didn't make sense. They didn't give enough reasons for how things worked. Very soft magic system.
Oh yeah, very soft. No rules whatsoever.
Yeah. So let's think about them that way a little bit, as we've been recording for a while. As literature, as novels, do they have merit? As fiction, do they have merit?
As fiction, do they have merit?
I'll give my opinion. Yeah, okay, I'll give my opinion real fast.
Go for it.
I think Left Behind are terrible fiction. For the same reason that I think, or for a similar reason to why I think The Great Gatsby is terrible fiction. Because if they're presented as fiction and an alternate, like you would view an alternate history, if they're viewed as just fun reads for a bizarre take on the end of the world, that would be fine. They're not particularly good or bad, but obviously enough people love them. We should give them respect. However, because every single person that still knows enough about these books that hasn't, or most every single person, at one point believed something like this is true. Like they are presented to them as reality. So they don't work as fiction, so they can't be good fiction books. Is my take on it.
Okay, fair enough. I would say I would agree with you. I don't think they're very good fiction. I think that they do a lot of stretching to try and make the story fit their message, and I think that's not a good way to write a book. I think that your message should be the integral part of the story, but instead they do just a lot of weird bending over backwards to try and make it all be cohesive. Mm-hmm. And I think that ultimately affects the books themselves, because there aren't all that many like cathartic points. And they, like I said, they're interesting. And if you're reading them as a kid, they're really cool because there's lots of action. But I don't think that they do a good job of, like you said, presenting the good guys as being persecuted. I don't think they really present the bad guys as being that powerful. I think that they lose a lot of what makes good storytelling.
Okay. That's fair. Okay. Are they good writing? As in, think for example, and this is just because I listened to a podcast that talked about it recently. Think, for example, the movie Noah. That was not the, the most recent one with Hermione and and the Gladiator. Why can't I think of actors' names today?
You're killing it. Russell Crowe.
Russell Crowe and whoever plays Hermione. Yeah, Noah.
Emma Watson.
Emma Watson, thank you. Think about that movie. It's not particularly fun, entertaining movie, but it was very well written and very, very interesting. But it wasn't a particularly good movie. It was just well written, interesting concept. Do the Left Behind books work on that level?
Probably. I don't remember them that well, but I think if I think if you ignore, I don't even know how to say it. Basically, the fact that these books are trying to present this fiction as real, and you can tell the authors are serious about it, that makes it kind of hard to say.
So it's real, so I think, basically, we can't really separate it from its results.
Yeah, because the authors don't want you to. I think that the idea itself is great. I think it's an idea that is used in a lot of other media. It's basically it's a zombie apocalypse novel series. And I think that there are a lot of really good ideas in the books, good plot points. It's you just can't really separate it out from its real world anchoring, I guess you might say.
Okay. Well, yeah. Yeah, we had to get those out of the way before we could talk about literally anything else, but I felt
but really we have no podcast left, so bye everyone. Good talking to you and have a good rest of your day.
I just felt really disappointed that when I pushed this and we started getting like instant feedback on Twitter, which you don't normally get, about doing Christian Lit, and this was the one everybody brought up, and I was like, but I haven't even read them Obviously, we had to get it out of the way before we can talk about anything else. So that's done now. Do we want to go over some of the other things we're going to be talking about? I don't think we have enough time to do it on this episode, but some of the other books we want to mention that is Christian Lit.
We sure can. So we spent an entire hour on the Left Behind series. I don't even think we did them like full justice.
Oh, not even close. These are huge things, and people are probably going to be mad at us that we dived that shallowly into them. But we just kind of want to get them out of the way and talk about things we want y'all to read.
Right.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, we can talk about the rest.
Okay. Well, I don't know how many episodes we're going to do on this. It's not going to be forever, but we're going to do it until we're done. We have, obviously, everything ever written by C.S. Lewis that deserves mention, especially things like the Screwtape Letters, the Chronicles of Narnia, and then his nonfiction work. And we did start at the beginning of this season his space trilogy that we should probably finish reading and just do an episode on. So we have C.S. Lewis as a huge topic. Then we have nonfiction, or as I've put in my comments here, the newest testament books that were taught as like side classes in churches as we were growing up and still around today, things like The Purpose-Driven Life and Financial Peace and Blue Like Jazz and Rob Bell. And I have the Left Behind series down there again as a joke about them being taken as nonfiction. But we have nonfiction Christian books we'll need to touch on. But then one of the biggest things I realized as I started just thinking of all the Christian books I read, and I hope you're hearing the implied air quotes every time I say that. the Christian books I read when we were younger, or just period, are by and large horror novels. And we really got to unpack why that is. Why were so many Christian books horror books?
They were freaky. A lot of freaky stuff.
So a lot of things by Frank Peretti and Ted Decker. There's a whole series, and this is really what spurned me to want to talk about this and realize we hadn't yet for some reason. is listening to an episode of Good Christian Fun. I remembered a book series called The Forbidden Doors, but I could not remember what they were called. Just remembered like these absolutely bizarre things that happened in books I was reading when I was like 9 or 10. And I couldn't remember what they were called. So I text Stephen and I text some group chats and I finally posted on Reddit to figure out what these books were. Finally found the name of them. And yeah, you're in for a trip when we talk about The Forbidden Doors. Those are all weird. Right,
I'm ready for them. Can't wait.
Yeah. So those are the things, some of the things we have coming up. Yeah. Stephen, you got anything you want to add to things we have to talk about?
I wrote a couple of things down on that list, I think. The one thing I'm excited to talk about is this Present Darkness series, because those books were...
Yeah.
They were something.
Those are Peretti, right? He also wrote Prophet. Yeah. Ooh, I just remembered everything in Prophet. Oh, man, that book. That book had a... Like, the plot of that book, I'm fairly certain, was... This is a teaser, literally coming off the top of my head, guys. Part of that book was about a news organization, like a small town broadcast news company, covering up the murder of a girl that happened at an abortion clinic, in which she was raped by, I think, Catholics. Like, that book is a freaking trip.
Well, that took a turn.
Yeah, we're gonna have to. I'm gonna have to dive into that. No. The Catholics were there. Was something about gays and Catholics going on in that book too.
Okay.
This is unearthing some scars, I think. This series is going to be very fun or horrible, depending on who you are. So keep tuning in. You can follow us at Twitter on @book_pod, Facebook @BookReportPodcast, Instagram @TheBookReportPod with underscores between each word. And if you have something you just have to tell us, you can email us at BookReportPod@gmail.com.
Hey,
this is gonna be a lot.
You're not kidding.
Oh my god, I have to Google Prophet right now, because if that book isn't even half as bizarre as I'm remembering. Yes, it exists. It came out the year I was born. It deals with abortion, scary voices, homosexuals destroying a Catholic church, so Catholics maybe are the good guys. Okay, all yes. Right. Ooh, yep, that's going to be fun. So, I don't know why we have... this is not an intro. We'll probably record an intro at some point and cut back in, but we're just gonna imagine they've already heard the intro, which is going to be recorded later. What's wrong with me?
This intro brought to you by the future.
Anyways,
say.
No, I was gonna mention the fact that these are time out 1 second. I'm on a podcast. I didn't mean to answer the phone. I was trying to send you a text. Bye. Sorry. I was trying to respond with a text as someone was calling me and I accidentally answered and put that on speakerphone. Okay. Do you have any ideas for an intro? Want to just wing one?
Yeah, we can just wing one.
Okay. Let's introduce ourselves. We haven't done that in several episodes.
All right.
Okay. You want to start? Want me to start?
Sure.
Okay. Wait.
Hi, I'm Steven, and I'm a middle-aged bowling player with too much time on my hands.
Hi, I'm Joel. I'm not sure what he's talking about. I've never seen Steven bowl, and he's the same age as I am.
Middle-aged, as we said. Today we're going to be talking about how
60.
Well, I was going to explain why I made that joke, and then you ruined the entire intro. But all right, we'll just whatever.
Now I feel bad.
Yeah, you should. You really should.
Go on, or we can start over and you can make your joke.
No, all right. Today we're going to be talking about how my childhood was stolen by the Left Behind books.
No, do it again. That was good.
No, I don't want to do it anymore. You start. You start this time. It's your job to figure out what we're going to say in this one.
Okay. Okay. Hi, I am not Stephen Reese.
Hi, I am.
See, you're supposed to go with I am not Joel Dean, but that works. I was just trying to put it back on you again. Mm-hmm. I'm bad at doing intro things that aren't typed up.
Well, maybe you shouldn't have shot mine out of the sky.
I didn't mean to. So rude. Okay, we can go with your original idea again. You want to restart it?
No.
Are you pouting?
I'm gonna come up with something else. Okay. Something better. Blackjack and hookers. You want to put the blackjack and the hook? Yeah, forget the whole thing.
I'm gonna put all of this in as like outtakes or something.
That's fine. I don't even care. Whatever you want. All right, so I'll start.
Okay.
Okay.